I'm Casey Willis from D&D Speak, and you are listening to Crit Academy.
Hello and welcome, heroes, to the Crit Academy. I am your host, Justin.
And I am your guest, Casey Willis.
I'm your co-host, Austin.
And I'm your co-host, Ian.
This podcast was created to provide you, our heroes, with new and reusable material for both players and DMs.
We hope to inspire you with creative content that you can bring with you on your next adventure.
Our show may not be suitable for young children, but neither is our D&D games.
Mm-hmm. No.
Casey, are your D&D games children-friendly?
Absolutely not.
I like
beer,
the
babes and booze. I guess that.
I didn't think
that went all the way through.
No, although it's probably rated R for like unexpected violence. You know, coming out of nowhere.
I hope that strong that's language. Somewhere. Unexpected violence.
I love that. That's
I want
glorious.
That to be a rating somewhere. Why is this game rated M for mature? Oh, there's unexpected violence. What do you mean? Well, you see that cat that's just happening to be walking down the street? It won't be there in about 5 seconds.
We have a really great show for you guys today. We are covering 100 Weapon Histories with its creator, the man, the myth, the legend of D&D Speak, Casey Willis. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Woo!
Yeah, pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
No problem. We're glad to have you. I've been following your stuff for a while, so I'm super excited to get more into it.
Yay!
If you enjoy our show and you would like to support us, please head on over to CritAcademy.com and check out our Patreon page. We also have our best-selling D&D supplements. We have our first gold bestseller, by the way. Yeah, it just hit Electrum like a week ago, and then it hit gold again. So that would be our fantastic terrain environmental effects. Environmental effects to help and hinder your heroes or some I forgot what I came up with.
You wrote it.
And there is
doesn't
help
mean
in
I
there.
Remember it.
It doesn't always mean that they're going to die in a volcano.
Oh yeah.
There is actual spots where they do actually get benefits.
Yeah, like if you stand on the necromancer's ritual spot where he did a blood sacrifice, all necromancy spells, DCs increase.
Yeah, so don't there you go.
If your necromancer spells, great. If the necromancer you're fighting is there, not so great.
You mean decrease.
No, it increases.
Right. Makes it easier to guess.
Makes the DC go up. Yeah, you increase your success rate.
Right.
Okay.
Lower the DC.
No.
Lower
number. You increase the caster's DC.
Yeah.
So if you're the necromancer,
that's what you meant. Okay.
Yeah. We're good. Yeah, okay. See? Now we
I remember
it.
What I made. Kind of.
Subtitles are a little hard, but we got the
and
main
Alicia
title.
And Alicia says the stream's not working.
Oh, that's not fucking good at all.
Even though everything I see seems to imply it's working.
Is it not on Facebook?
I'm watching it on Facebook.
Oh, well then.
Well then, I don't know.
Sorry, Alicia. Don't know what's going
Should
on for
I
you.
Look? unless she's looking for a picture of you, which in case there's not one, right, Casey?
That's right.
That's true, yeah.
Is it on Twitch as well?
We're actually talking to a literal specter.
Yeah. A disembodied voice. Anyways, there is one thing I want to announce before we get into it. We just released on Saturday our Words of Power, magical words and spell incantations for your D&D spells. Everything in the player's handbook is in there. Some of the names have a slight alteration due to copyright laws.
Yeah, you know, happens.
But I'm really excited. It's been selling really, really well, and I've gotten nothing but great feedback. So head on over to CritAcademy.com and check it out.
So the Latin is more or less correct?
Nobody's bitched about it yet.
So there you go. All right.
I don't know. I don't speak.
Or maybe
I used
it's
Google translators. So.
Or maybe it's just like we have a whole bunch of non-Latin speakers that are like, sounds about right.
Looks good.
Makes sense to me.
I mean, if you think about
it, Noctis Infernum.
You ever seen you never go back and question the shit that shows up in Supernatural. You
know what I mean? See, it makes sense to us. That's
anyways, good. So Crit Nation, thank you so much for joining us here today at Crit Academy Studios, where everything's made up and your rolls don't matter.
That's right. Your rolls are like a weapon without any history.
So most of them?
That's the first
most of
thing
mine.
I thought of.
Well, hopefully not anymore.
Right. That's what we're here to fix, right?
See, I really should have done something in our current campaign. Since I have a magic weapon, I should have said, yeah, it came down from this dude that I happened upon it by unfortunate means. I killed him. But I have it now. Would have been so much more interesting than just, I own this. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what she's talking about. I pulled it up and I can see it. Unless it's skipping, but we might all be got too many streams going.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you've got all more than one open, if you want to close the video, that'd be great. Anyways.
That's how I chat.
I'm really, really excited. Well, if only somebody gave you a thing to chat with everyone all at once. So our first segment, our Let's Talk About Blank segment, I've stumbled across an absolutely stunning article. Casey, are you a fan of Game of Thrones by chance?
Big fan.
Big fan. Then you clearly know who George R.R. Martin is then, huh?
Oh, of course.
Did you know that one of the most iconic monsters in D&D was pulled from one of his books?
I did not.
Which one?
Which one?
So in this article from Christian Hoffer at comicbook.com, you may remember him. We had him on about a month or so ago. He talks about the Githyanki, considering it's been the prime talk of the new Baldur's Gate game.
Yeah.
And he goes on to talk a little bit about the infighting between the Mind Flayers and the Githyanki. But what really tips you off is that the term and word Githyanki was actually inspired and designed by George R.R. Martin. Now, the blog actually says that it wasn't as fleshed out as it is now. And it was more, but they were, you know, they had psychic powers and they were an enslaved alien species.
Huh.
Okay. I mean, it blew my mind when I saw this. The Githyanki are in, it's called Dying of the Light. And I have not read that. I don't know much about it, but that just blew my mind away that you can just kind of get away with that.
Well, I mean, you know.
What are your thoughts on that as a fan of the awesome and epic
George
Game of Thrones? Game of Thrones, Thones. Game of Thrones.
I mean, that's crazy. I had no idea that seems like a race that's just now starting to get a little bigger.
Right.
In the Dungeons and Dragons, I guess, 5th edition.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really interesting that somebody that big made that, and that's not, you know, bigger news.
Apparently not. It wasn't until many, many, many years later that he found out it was in there. And at that point, he's like, eh. didn't bother to pursue any action. And he basically said there didn't seem to be any hard feelings or anything. So I think that's pretty cool, because that's not the way it would go these days.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Not at all.
And then some Mervain, you have all the hook monster in D&D, right?
The hook monster.
I don't know this hook monster. It's possible the hooks for hands.
Hooked horror?
Yes.
Little.
Well, here's the thing about that. The original artwork, Gygax based it off of a bootleg figurine. They got in a box from figurines from Hong Kong. Turns out it ended up being based off of Gigan from the Godzilla movies, so they had to change the artwork.
That's hilarious. That's
so funny.
Everything is stolen from somewhere, or borrowed. I like to say borrowed.
Yeah, it's just borrowed.
Borrowed, without asking.
That's funny.
What DM doesn't borrow?
Right, right. Mm-hmm. It's okay to accept inspiration.
The tradition continues.
Right? Because nothing's really unique. I mean, look at all the stuff that they just remake because they ain't got anything unique.
I mean,
it's true.
To be fair, if even Gygax is doing it, then...
Right. I read an article, just really quick, I read an article about where he actively was DM versus players for a long time.
Huh.
It was really interesting. That's where the whole Tomb of Horrors came from.
Yeah.
As he was tired of how strong his players were, he's like, all right, bastards, time to die!
Buckle up.
So, yes, you can...
teeth, it's time.
I thought this was a fascinating piece of information, and it honestly makes me want to go and read The Dying of the Light, because if it's got, Mind Flayer characters that are enslaving this alien race called Githyanki, that's going to tickle my dice just enough that I think I want to check it out. So,
yeah,
I may do that when I get another...
George R.R. Martin, great author, so, I mean, it's really hard to...
Now we can finish the Song of Ice and Fire series.
Right. Casey, do you have any other points on this before we move on?
Just like I was saying, I'm very surprised that that's not bigger news, that, you know, George R. R. Martin created a race that is in
that's it.
D&D.
Yeah, I mean, this article D&D. Just came out on March 10th, so it may still be really fresh, funky fresh.
Yeah. It's only a few days old.
You said you're a big gamer. Did you see the trailer for Baldur's Gate 3, and are you excited for it?
Oh my god. I'm so excited. I cannot wait, man.
I hear that, man. I'm really doped up and excited to see it. I'll probably not ever get time to play it, because that's the story of my life these days, because I'm working all the time, but that's how it goes.
When you're in high school, I want to play games, but I have no money. As an adult, I have money, but I now have no time to play games.
That's the truth.
Oh, that's funny. So, that'll do it for our Let's Talk About Blank segment. Before we move on to our main topic, we have a wonderful gift to give away, compliments of Loresmith. Austin, what are we giving away today and every Sunday?
And every week. It is from Loresmith, the Modular Dungeon Tiles, the Arcania ones. Modular Dungeon Tiles are an easy way to create your own beautiful digital maps. The Arcania lets you make dark, shadowy dungeon maps, rich with the fumes of arcane secrets. Maybe they'll find a sword. Maybe a monster. Maybe it's a mind flayer. We'll see.
It's definitely a mind flayer.
Definitely a mind flayer.
Who is our winner today there, Casey?
It is Daniel Mitchum.
Woo! Congratulations, Daniel Mitchum. If you enjoy the product, please let Loresmith know. Leave him a review. Tell him you got it from us and that we're awesome and they're awesome, and just basically just give everyone great news, because that's what we all love. If you didn't win, have no fear. We've got you covered. Head on over to critacademy.com/loresmith to get a free set of digital terrain and so much more, including even a one-shot, which is cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We all like one-shots.
Some more than others.
Yeah, it's true.
You can get away with a lot of stuff in a one shot that you can't do in a campaign.
I think that's why people tend to go nuts in one shots, because there's no consequences afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely
true. Who cares if I burn down this city?
I'm not gonna be this character again.
Why is this level 7 character got a holy avenger? How'd you get this?
I'm really excited for our topic today. 100 weapon histories. Of course, the man, the myth, the legend, Casey Willis from D&D Speak. Once again, thank you so much for joining us, man. We really appreciate it.
So happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Woo!
Glad to have you.
I was wondering if he was going to say, toss a coin to your writer. No?
No.
I totally.
Nah.
Witcher? No? Oh, come on, man. Nah. You guys
suck. It's been done so much already.
So, if you don't know what D&D Speak is, it is one of my favorite resources for D&D content. It is a D100 website. I think that's the accurate way to describe it. And before we get too much into that, Casey, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I am a web developer here in Asheville, North Carolina. I've been playing tabletop games for about 5 years now, and just absolutely fell in love with it. Just every aspect of it.
Yeah.
So we started out with 3.5, and realized that with some of the newer players, it was a little intimidating.
Yeah.
A lot of nobody wanted to spend money on 600 books, so
we moved on to
5th edition, and it's been so much fun. Also really enjoy the Warhammer fantasy role-playing game.
Ooh, good stuff.
And Lamentations of the Flame Princess is one of our favorites, too. So we'll normally play that when some people are missing from our main campaign. Mm-hmm. We'll just play like a one-shot from Lamentations.
I don't know. I've never played that. Can you tell me a little bit about it?
Yeah.
Really? Oh, man. So it's an old-school clone. So it's basically OSR, but it is completely just weird and just it's so mind-boggling. Like there is a there's a spell in it called Summon, which is one of the funniest, craziest things like game mechanics I've ever heard of. So they basically what you do is if you wanna so you can get this spell at level 1 for a magic user.
Oh
so
boy.
You summon something and basically you decide what form it takes, what it's made out of, what power it has. So you could roll, like, for example, in our last game, we had a giant ant made out of ice that could make wood disappear with its mind.
That's crazy. What kind of attitude did your aunt have?
Oh, it was pissed. It was just pissed off. it's such a fun game, and it's so strange. Like there's a lot of like heavy metal aspects in it.
Ooh. We'll have to give it a shot.
Where I first saw my first set of cartoon boobs was heavy metal. Is that weird?
No, it's not weird. I think a lot of people would agree with you.
Oh, I'll have to look more into that.
It sounds really cool.
It sounds really weird. Definitely sounds like a give it a one shot and then be kind of done with it for then. But
yeah, interesting. That's exactly what it is. But it's really fun. Like if you kind of like the old school style of playing.
Okay.
Where everyone dies.
Yeah, wherever.
That's what I remember of the old days. Everyone dies.
Where everyone gets murked.
It's so lethal.
Oh, man. So it sounds like you have a lot of experience under your belt when it comes to games. Do you have, can you tell us maybe what's your most memorable D&D or RPG moment?
Oh, of course. I've got one in mind. So this is one that my players and I talk about almost every time we meet up. It's referenced somewhere in our game where we it's the final confrontation with Strahd in Curse of Strahd.
Ooh.
Which was one of the, oh man, it was such a good game. So basically, you know, we were at the last fight. All the players were, you know, it was like a 5.5 hour fight. So we were all like getting so close to the end. All the players were like super badly injured. And they knew there wasn't a lot of time left to defeat him. And basically on the turn before Strahd was basically going to just annihilate the players. Our druid landed a nat 20 on his turn.
Ooh.
And just completely saved the day by doing enough damage to kill Strahd.
Oh, man.
Holy crap.
I mean, we just all stood up and just verbally just cheered. And
just like,
yeah, exactly.
That sounds awesome.
We still, to this day, just talk about it all the time and how awesome that moment was.
Oh, man.
It's hard to get the moment where everyone literally jumps out of their seat and cheers, yeah, way to fucking go, Billy!
That's what you play for, man. Those moments. Like, it's so much fun.
Do you have any moments where you feel like you failed as a DM or consequently maybe a player?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I feel like we all have somewhere.
So my favorite type of DMing, I rely a lot on randomness, so I use a lot of big tables, D100 tables. So, you know, when you roll in a D100 table, you know, sometimes you can get some things that completely
just
come out of left field.
Yeah,
you have to roll with it. You have to.
Yeah, yeah.
So one of the tables that I was using was called 100 Teleportation Mishaps. So basically, when a player uses a teleport spell, and they don't really know the location of where they're going. Maybe they've just heard about it, or they only know minor details. There's a chance that the teleportation spell could go wrong. So, sure enough, eventually, my players used a teleportation spell, and it failed. So, I pull out my trusty D100 mishaps table, and wouldn't you know it, they they ended up in the Domain of Dread instead of where they wanted to go.
That's hilarious. So,
that's rough.
I would call this a fail just because I completely derailed myself after preparing months and months for a story. The characters were going to go on.
That's fair.
But I mean, it all worked out because I was able to throw in my all-time favorite villain ever, Lord Saw.
Ooh.
So that was Should
I know that name, or is that a custom monster?
So he's a big villain from I believe Dragonlance, but made some he actually ended up in the Domain of Dread. He was pretty bad dude.
He was
apparently the first Death Knight.
Ooh. Oh, okay.
I love that lore right there. That's dope.
Dealing with a villain on the Plane of Dread, and I'm sure your players also gained a new appreciation for Jenga towers.
Oh, yeah.
Love Jenga, or the Dread Jenga, man.
Oh, so good.
Yep.
All right. And obviously, you are from D&D Speak, so what can you tell us about it?
Sure. So D&D Speak is a website that I created, and it's just basically to give DMs and GMs a multitude of resources that they can use in any game. Mostly fantasy based right now. Hopefully, dig into some sci-fi stuff later. But we have, we have D100 lists, random generators, fantasy music that I've composed myself.
Oh, that's awesome.
A new video library that kind of goes into depth of some of the lists we create, and hopefully expanding on that in the next coming weeks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Had no idea of the video thing. That's awesome.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I had no idea of the video thing. That's awesome. I've seen all the lists and the generators and stuff.
Just made the D&D Speak YouTube channel. So we've got one video up right now where it's five items that you could find in a fantasy black market. So it's pretty cool. So I took one of the D100 lists and I went through it and picked five of my very favorite ones and just kind of went into detail about how you could use it in your game.
There you go.
That sounds like what we're going to do today.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
so
awesome.
So what D&D Speak is most used for and what it was known for from the beginning was the D100 lists. So right now we've got over 200 D100 lists, and this grows every single week.
Nice.
That's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it covers all kinds of things, man. I've found that sometimes when I'm making new lists, I've already created ones, I'll get, halfway through making one, and I'll be like, oh, man, we've already made this.
I just thought of 50 ideas for no reason.
Exactly.
D1000, challenge accepted.
Exactly, there we go.
That's new, next list. 100 things for no reason.
It's like Wild Magic Table, but it's worse. So, it's just even crazier stuff.
So obviously, like you mentioned, you've done 200 of these. This sounds like a huge undertaking. Can you kind of tell us how this whole how did you even get into doing something like this? How did it all start? Can you kind of tell us about that? How did it come?
Yeah,
to be?
Of course. So when I was first starting, I found my very first D100 list, and it was something like. Like 100 wilderness locations or something like that. And I fell in love with the concept because there was, like I said, I love the randomness of games and, 100 different options. That's, you'll never get the same option twice. I mean, you will mathematically, but
depends on how often you use it, right?
Yeah,
exactly. But I loved it. And, I noticed that there really wasn't that many out there. Like there was a handful, but I thought it would be cool to kind of create those. So what I did was I wrote a bunch of them myself. The very first one I ever did was 100 things that you could find in an ogre's pocket.
So just what like, the just hell?
Hey, you never
just
know.
100 random things you could find from pickpocketing an ogre.
I didn't know ogres had pockets.
Hey, maybe. Well,
loincloths.
He's got a hammer in here. Oh, dude, that's not a hammer.
Hey, man.
So what I did was
always the prison pocket.
I created I created the D100 subreddit, and what I would do was I would share the ones that I created on there.
Okay.
And then if I ever found any out there, I'd kind of put them in the subreddit to kind of archive them.
Mm-hmm.
And the subreddit, the D100 subreddit, got pretty popular pretty quick, and so I created the D&D Speak site to kind of archive all these lists that the subreddit was creating.
Mm-hmm.
So basically the idea now is somebody will post an idea or a topic that they're interested in. Like, they could be 100 magic trinkets. And you just post that topic on the subreddit and the whole community will come together and in the comment section comment their ideas for the list.
Wow.
So within a couple hours, there's so many people on it now. I think there's something like over 80,000 now on there.
Goodness, yeah. Wow.
So you can post a list and, within hours you'll have a
complete list. Yeah, it'll just be there, list. Wow.
So, I tried to put a list together and I really failed miserably. What are the rules and policies of posting there? For instance, I wanted to make a list of combat I'm not creative at the table when it comes to describing combat. So having it written out or having some sort of D20 or D100 list to say, oh, this is a piercing melee weapon. Here's a description. Are there rules to that? Like, if I publish something on there, am I allowed to utilize that stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. So the basically the only rules that are in place at the moment is to come up with the first five suggestions yourself, mm-hmm. just to kind of set the tone of the list and tell people, you know, what exactly you're looking for.
Okay.
And to add just a short description up at the top. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's basically it. I mean, you'll have so many different people with so many different voices coming in. So I guess it's just up to your discretion which ones you want to use. And I mean, since it's your list, you could take somebody's idea and you could be like, well, it's a good idea, but I could make it better mm-hmm, this improve way.
Upon it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's yeah. very cool. It sounds like, okay. Yeah. So how long has this been going on? When did you start this?
So I've been doing this for about 3 years now.
Okay. Wow. There you go.
Probably a lot of, so how much time a week, if you don't mind sharing, do you spend running and maintaining this?
Oh my God. so I'd say probably 2 or 3 hours a day.
That sounds about right. Wow.
Yep. Yeah. So, and that changes all the time, obviously.
Oh yeah. I can imagine. Yeah.
Damn.
But I'd say 2 or 3 hours a day is probably what, because I've got a couple of different things going on too with D&D Speak, especially on the Instagram account. Where yes. what I'll do is I'll take some of the completed lists that we're doing and pick some of my favorite ones and just kind of expand on them a little bit, and I'll make little posts about them on the D&D Speak Instagram account.
I've seen those. They're very. Was it you that I texted? Like, how did you get it to perfectly fit and not cut everything off? Because every time I post like our player tips or our DM tips or something like that, I feel like it always cuts shit out. I was like, how did you get it? He's like, I just make it square, dude. I'm like, I'm gonna try that.
That's what you have to do. And if you need a page two, I mean, you just
gotta
upload multiple
yeah.
images into one post.
Wow.
I know what you mean, man. It's frustrating. I had to learn that the hard way for a long time.
So thank you for your help.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course. Well, like I said, I'm a big fan of this website. I've used it several times. Maybe not at my table, but I roll and I grab what I want out of it and I bring it to my games. Do you ever do them just right at you? Well, you did. You just talked about your mishaps, so you must keep a bunch of these right at your table.
Hmm. Yeah. So I'll have the site pulled up, and if I need one. At the top of each list, there's a button that you can press that randomly generates a suggestion for you.
That's okay. Awesome.
That's usually how I use them.
Yeah, I really want. I tried to figure out how to do that after contacting you, and I'm too dumb. So
my IQ points are not high enough.
Right, right.
Apparently, mine aren't either.
Well, like I have.
We're just struggling.
I have 3 years of show notes, and one of the things I wanted to do is take all the DM tips and player tips and put them in a generator. So when you just press it, it gives you a DM tip. Or a player tip.
Let's get together sometime, man. I'd be glad to help you out.
Oh, that sounds awesome, because I can't figure that shit out.
He's like, I need help.
I was like, I barely can use Wix, so. that being said, let's get into 100 Weapon Histories and let everyone see for themselves the amazing kind of content that has in this. Now, obviously, we're not going to read 100 of these things, but each of us have picked some of our favorites.
Yeah.
We're going to read them to you, and then we're going to tell you maybe about, we'll discuss maybe how we would get more out of it, what we would do to enhance the role play, how would you have more fun with it, right?
Yeah.
So
I guess you'll go first.
Yeah. So we'll rotate. We'll see how long it goes, and then we'll keep going through.
Okay.
I know, I think Casey did, you did pick one, right? So,
yeah. So, my favorite one.
Awesome. So, as the guest, do you want to go first?
Sure. Yeah, I can do that.
Cool. Go ahead.
So my very favorite one. Okay, so mine is the, so I'll just read it. So this weapon was reforged from the shattered weapons of three mighty heroes who slew each other in the final battle, in the final hours of the Battle of Dagford Keep. It was assembled to signify the new truce between the three kingdoms. So something about having a weapon that was reforged from three mighty weapons really stood out to me.
How would you get like the most out of that as a player?
It might be kind of cool if when you used it, it randomly chose maybe a power from one of the three weapons.
Ooh.
Like, for example, maybe one of them was, you know, had some sort of ice magic on it, and maybe one had a, you know, a some sort of fire magic. Like, and if you, you know, maybe you rolled a d6, and 1 and 2 is the fire magic, 2 and 3 is the ice magic. Or 3 and 4, rather, and then 5 and 6. Yeah, it could be something else. And, yeah, so I just thought that would be super cool to have a weapon that, you know, changed its attack type just randomly when you used it based on the three powerful weapons.
That is so cool. So here's what I think. So you've got a weapon that is tied to a massive historical event.
Mm-hmm.
Instantly, that tells me as a DM and even as a player that people may recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes a talking point in taverns and when you go to meet with nobles. Why are you, this person, carrying a weapon that was wielded by mighty heroes?
Right.
And that was a representation of a truce between kingdoms. How does your character fit into that?
Right. Like, how did you just stumble upon it?
Did you?
Maybe you did. I don't know. Did
well,
you?
Well, I'm asking you. If you would have got this, how would you fix it? How would you fit that to your character?
I would say...
Either from a role play perspective, maybe I'm a noble. If I take the noble background, would fit that, right?
Maybe you were a soldier, and maybe they thought, maybe the three kingdoms thought you're probably the best fit warrior to hold on to this piece, this legacy, because we know you won't do anything stupid with it. Which you're the player, you will do something stupid with it. But
so if that is that a recent event? Where you got it, or is it something that was passed down to you?
I was going
to
say, maybe like...
It's a family lineage, and your family is representative of this truce. That's kind of what Jace Bellerin is in Magic the Gathering for the Gatewatch or whatever it is. He's the living pact of this deal. Mm-hmm. Maybe your character could be something similar. What do you think about that, Casey?
Yeah, I think that's great. And on the other hand, I have some very roguish, sneaky characters in my party. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, maybe they could have stolen it and not realized what it meant to the three kingdoms.
Oh, now they're all chasing
it. They stole it and it caused some kind of conflict.
Oh, that is cool.
The three kingdoms are kind of blaming each other.
I was going to say, maybe it caused warfare between the three kingdoms. So that means they're that one of them, they all thought you had to have stolen the sword, which means you're the one who's saying the truce is over.
Oh, shit.
Well, wait, the sword? No, I didn't steal it. It's been passed down to the generation by the Armstrong family.
Oh, God. See, this is why I like these. Whether it's a magical story or a magical weapon or even a mundane, maybe it's not magical anymore, but it's very known to what it is, or maybe it's tied to this big significant, and now a war is going to start between three factions because your stupid ass stole it from a throne room.
Is it the sand spell, the one that talks to spirits and stuff? What's the spell that allows you
to speak with dead?
Speak with dead? Is it just speak with dead?
I have no idea.
But anyway, what if you could just like summon the spirits of the three heroes or something, and like you could just talk to them because you have the piece that has it, or legend lore. You could do something with that probably, right?
You could toss it into giving you, if you took it the magical route, it kind of jumping off what you said. What if it gives you expertise in one of the three specialties of the
heroes?
That'd
be way cooler. I would take that way more.
So you would like
just some simple damage boost.
Basically what's happening is you're harnessing the knowledge of that mighty hero. So, I'm having too much fun with this.
Oh, yeah. And we got to go back to ours now.
So, Silver Wolf says, it sounds like the Percy Jackson situation. If you don't know, in The Lightning Thief, Zeus's magical thunderbolt is stolen. And they're all blaming this person when it, you know, was somebody else. And so this whole big, giant battle is, you know, threatening to loom overhead, I think, until it's returned. So... very cool.
That one a lot.
This
is
why I really wanted to cover this with you on it, because there's just so much you could do with this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Was there anything else we wanted to touch on this?
No, I'm good with it. That was a lot. That was good.
Austin, which one did you pick? Going in reverse. Which one of the three do you want to talk about?
I'm going to go with my third one on here, because that one actually would tie into the character that I'm kind of playing right now. It says, "This weapon has been a favorite for all who have ever wielded it. It radiated with bright light in the hands of all who have held it. But in yours, it emanates only shadow." And it's just like,
oh shit!
It's like, I fucked up. I don't know what's happening, but I guess I fucked up. And because I'm an Azimar, this would be so weird, right?
Oh, man.
Because I'm inherently imbued with light, but I'm also lawful evil. So what if it's like, it somehow reads your alignment with things.
Oh,
so like,
shit.
You handed it off to somebody, it radiates bright light, they know they're a good person. But if somehow they hand it back to you,
but how do they know that's why it's shadowy?
We don't know. Oh, that could have just been.
Oh my god, that's cool.
That's cool.
That's almost as good as the time where I really post online of the party paladin passed to detect evil, and it triggered like hardcore. And pointed at the party wizard.
He's just like, what the fuck?
And it was like, you didn't know I was evil?
You've never done anything to say so. Just because you weren't there. So, Austin, or not Austin, Ian, Casey. We'll go with Casey. I'll just work around the room.
Work around the room, yeah.
what would you do to really get a lot of flavor out of this, either as a hook as a DM or as a roleplay as a character?
Sure. I would say that maybe the last person that had it, maybe it fell into the hands of somebody that, you know, somebody that was evil that tried to harness, that loved the weapon so much that they tried to harness the power out of it.
Ooh,
and maybe doing that, they had switched souls with it.
Ooh.
Like maybe the person that was trying to get the energy out of it or the power out of it was sucked into it.
Oh, that's cool.
So it's actually just a weapon that traps souls into it. I don't want to wield this weapon anymore. Wait, maybe I could trap the enemy's soul into it, and then I gain their power.
Okay.
I'm brilliant after all.
I like that, and I want to jump off that, but I want to hear what Ian says before I do, because I like where you did with that.
Like my next concept, or just the
no. What would you do with this, either as a DM to get a hook out of it, or a player to get the most roleplay out of it?
Well, what kept on occurring to me was it was passed on by from paladin to paladin.
Okay, and, that's cool.
And the one who got like, oh, I'm apparently evil,
so he doesn't know that he's a bad person. Like, why is this thing leaking darkness? I think that reads off your aura. What?
I don't think
I do have dark thoughts sometimes.
He just kind of looks at it, kind of nods like, oh, you know, maybe it kind of does.
It was
make
that
sense.
One time me and that squirrel didn't get along. turns out so I just finished reading Warbreaker.
I did want to bring down that village.
And there's a guy who tortures, he stopped torturing people to put it under control, but he tortures like critters, like animals and stuff.
Yeah.
And like has them like hanging up in this like basement and everything. And what if you have like a dark inner kind of twisty pleasure, something that's you and yourself aren't dark, but in order to let that darkness out, you do something like bad under the kind of the under the radar to kind of suppress that bloodthirst or something,
right?
Oh god.
Anyway, what was your idea?
So here you mentioned it being the
whole soul,
the soul sucking in thing. So what I envision is, as a DM, is I think that I would gradually use that as a way to bring it into eventually a sentient magical weapon. So as the person is, let's say as the player is using it and they slay something, I might give just a little description. They may not even be aware of what it's doing. You just see a little description as you slay the goblin, the flame, the dark shadowy flame bursts out for a second, and then you hear a scream as it sucks in, and it just kind of becomes the norm. That's what it does. And then at a higher level, I change it to a tormented multi-personality sentient weapon that's got like it's got all the personalities of all the big NPCs that the player slayed, yelling at them the whole time.
I was thinking, what if it just like suck the soul out of you, like it's constantly draining you.
Ooh.
So like you're, and it starts to just get this like weird like malformed personality that's you. It's just like constantly like you're like, obviously you're inherently evil, that's why it's all dark and scary and spooky, but what if it's like just like the worst of you? So now you're becoming a good person because it's
pulling
all
out the
you,
darkness,
and you're just like, what is happening to me? And, like, it's just screaming, kill everything! Murder more!
Ooh, going back to his paladin comment, maybe the reason it was radiating light is it was pulling the goodness out of paladins.
So strangely, because
they didn't have no darkness.
So strangely enough, it's actually helping you.
I don't know, man.
It's making you a lawful good character, as opposed to making you more evil.
That'd be such a cool weird concept.
I think it would be very interesting.
I don't know what you'd do with it mechanically, but it'd be weird. But
you don't need a mechanic forever. That's the beauty of flavor, is you can do with it whatever you want. Like, you know, not wanting to draw the blade because it emanates shadow everywhere and it's already dark in here as it is. That's gonna put out the lights.
I can't see already, and this makes it harder.
So anyway, handy. What did you mean I'm evil? Didn't I single-handedly slay that pack of gnolls? Dude, those are blink dogs, and that was a zoo. There were children there.
Oh, I love our listeners. That's funny.
That's a good one.
Ian, which one do you want to talk about?
We'll go to Ian real quick, yeah.
Okay. Well, since you basically already explained by accident what my choice is.
Well, pick another one. That's why you got three.
The wood in this weapon was provided willingly for the original owner by a powerful forest god.
Ooh.
Each following bearer has either sought out the god's blessing or warred with nature itself.
I don't know about that last one. I don't know if you can win against nature.
Like, every time he goes to take a leak in the woods, vines try to, like, pull him and drag him in.
He's trying to, like, the hole just, like, the hole just opens up and it's just like, and you're just, yeah, and the guy's done. Oh. And the sword just...
So this is
wow,
really...
a perfectly sunny day. Did I just get struck by lightning?
So this is a pretty interesting one because it involves deities.
I love when deities are involved. It needs to happen more often.
Is that a nudge at me? You're about to fucking descend into hell. There's going to be damn near enough deities to...
I want to fight everything. So I require it.
So Ian, you pick this. What do you kind of envision as a player getting the most out of this idea?
Like, I can picture, like, a bow being given to a ranger or some sort of elven craftsman.
Ooh, that's cool.
It can be, like a nice, almost elvish-looking bow, and then it has, like, sinew for the string that's already, like, made. Or, like, a vine.
Vine. Even. I think a vine, a really thin vine would be pretty cool.
That's really cool.
Or a quarterstaff given to a druid.
Ooh. I was thinking quarterstaff at first, but then I was like, what if it's the hilt of, like, a two-handed sword or something? And it's got this intricate carvings. Because you always see, you know, the staff or the bow that's magical and elvish. But you ever wonder if the elves' swords got, like, ancient carved, you know, tree wood as the hilt?
What if the whole blade itself was wood, actually? And what if, like, it was somehow, like, just strong enough? Like, it's got the strength of an actual blade.
There was...
And people always thought it's really weird. Like, why are you walking around with this, like, this weird training sword? It's like, oh, it's not a training sword. You just, like, drop it and it goes through a stone pillar and you're like, oh!
Did you ever watch Yu Yu Hakusho at all?
Yes.
There's a guy early on who has a ancient wooden sword carved from a holy blessed ancient tree, designed to smite evil. And the whole time, the guy's like, "I'm not evil."
Well, I was thinking about that one actually.
But so I like this because I like that the whole wooden sword idea. That thing is dope as hell. This is interesting because it can tie to a character who has like the hermit background, or if they're a druid
or a
nature cleric, it fits the theme really, really well and doesn't in and of itself require any magic. The fact that you're seeking out the god's blessing, maybe if I'm a cleric, this item, let's say I'm a nature cleric, this item is my holy symbol or my holy focus or whatever it's called now, and it represents the gift that my deity has given me. And to me, I would take advantage of making it almost like a living thing. Maybe if it's a sword at the bottom of the hilt, maybe a flower blooms occasionally or something.
I was going to add something else when you were done. I had another idea that kind of like spawned off of that. With the whole like warring with nature itself, what if you were just a warlock and your patron's like, that's unholy, you need to like find the thing that created this and get rid of it.
Ooh, I like that. What about you, Casey?
So I also was I really liked the ward with nature itself part. It might be kind of cool if maybe your players maybe once they defeat the final boss of like some kind of castle or something, and they're going through his treasury and they find it, and maybe this weapon is also sentient, and it wants to return to the woods.
Ooh, I like that.
Be a cool, cool little quest to bring it back to where it came be. From.
I just had a reminder. Did you ever watch Happy Gilmore? Where, what is this I heard of you breaking a rake and throw it in the woods? Well, no, it was broken, and I put it in the woods because it's made of wood, and it wanted to be with its wood family.
Oh, man. All right, we should probably...
Yep, move on.
Speed it up just a little bit more.
So, the one that I... So, I picked three of them, and I really, really... Yeah, I really, really like this one. I really struggled which one to pick, so what we're going to go with is... the hilt has a notch for each kill the weapon... kill made with the weapon. Although it was wielded by a great hero for many years... There's only a single notch.
Do you know how badass you have to be able to say, I've only killed one man and I've ended war?
Yeah.
Like, that sounds awesome. A guy on the fucking battlefield, front lines, and I've only had to kill one man with this weapon. I've talked everyone else out of the way. I only killed the commander with this weapon. And he stabs in the ground. He's like, that's where his head is.
You know, the reason I like this so much? Because even if the player themselves had no intention of being more of a pacifist type character, if this weapon was given to them with this story, do you think they would instinctually try to live up to that?
I think they kind of would, honestly. Well, I'm thinking if I was like Zorax right now, right? I'm some obviously painfully evil dude. And if I had this, I'd probably be like, I'll save this for the one bastard that I need to kill it with.
So he carries it at his hip?
Yes.
Oh,
as like a,
it doesn't draw it.
This is my weapon to kill for that one person that needs to be killed that I think has to be that one. And then I keep it there. Because he is lawful. He's kind of honorable to some extent. So he has some form of...
Honorable, just like judges, huh?
Yeah, kind of, well...
What do you think, Casey?
I think that's really cool. I like the diplomacy aspect of that. Like maybe the weapon could give you like a great increase to your charisma.
Ooh,
and like how that. Well you talk and articulate ideas. And
yeah, that's kind of.
I think that's great. That's a really cool idea.
Or that's the sword he draws out when crabs on the line.
Right. Or yeah.
See that once again, the whole fact that it only killed one person. That says a lot about the hero that wielded it. But what I think would be cool is if you twisted that. It wasn't wielded by a great hero. It was wielded by a great villain. And it's only ever slayed a great hero.
Ooh. Only one?
Well.
And only, what if it was still just like that one person and it just happened to be like a great hero?
Yeah. Maybe he deserved it, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know.
Or old handy suggestion, the sword has a notch in itself for every kill, but the notches gradually form runes.
Ooh.
I like that, cool. Actually, yeah.
I like that. Overall, I love these things because, as you can tell, they inspire so much creativity. And that's the point of D&D, right? To come up with something memorable. And everyone has a long sword. Not everyone has a longsword with a wooden hilt made from an ancient tree that every couple of months a flower, a rose petal, rose blossoms on the bottom of it. You know what I mean? Even if you don't give it any magical effect, that is still a hell of an interesting story.
Right, that flavor just increases the quality of your game so much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And indirectly, it gives hooks for the DM. Because we know players want magical items. If a player went out of their way to describe this sort of weapon, what can I, as the DM, do to reward that? Maybe that, I'll go back to the elvish, you know, wooden hilt thing, maybe that flower eventually blooms into something else. Maybe it becomes it starts to gradually... break into like sharp vines that start to make its way up the hilt or something as they do certain deeds. Let's say the character's a druid or something, and they're using this scimitar with this, you know, wooden thing, and every time they save a tree or every time they save a fey creature, it sprouts and grows just a little bit. You can't tell me as a player you wouldn't be like, shit, let's go save some Fae. I want to see what's going to happen. You know? So it's not just about the interest that the player brings, but how we as the Dungeon Masters and Game Masters can actually utilize that to make the experience that much better for the players kind and the, everyone at the table.
Put it together, yeah.
I don't want to get too much detail into it, but I do want to talk about this last one really quick before we move on. This weapon was forged by a high artificer of an ancient kingdom for the coronation ceremony of Prince Derek Half-Elven of Zerule. The prince's treacherous brother used it to slay Derek as he was being crowned and then fled the land with the weapon. A royal assassin tracked down the brother and used the weapon to kill him, thus giving it the nickname the Prince Slayer.
That's interesting.
Is that not fucking cool or what?
That's some badass shit. Cool. You know, it was forged by, like, a high artificer, so you can probably just, like, stack some, like, if you go through, like, the artificer page, stack, like, a certain effect onto it.
Ooh, like one of the infusions? Mm-hmm. Is that what they're called? They're infusions,
yeah, they're
right?
Infusions, yeah.
Oh, that's cool. But you can't if you're not an artificer, you can't re-imbue it, so.
No.
You put more effort into that one.
Right.
You have to go find one.
You have to pay an artificer, like, yeah, I can restore it, but it's going to cost you.
Yeah.
But that way you can give it a more potent ability. It's not something that just recharges. You can give it a very powerful ability, and they just can't get it very often. Mm-hmm. So, very cool.
Yeah.
Overall, what are your guys' thoughts of this? I mean, we only went over, what, like 5 of these? And there's 100.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a link to our, you can not only find it on the link to the DM Speak website, but there's also, if you really enjoy his products and want to support him, it is on DM's Guild, so you can toss a few coins to your writer there. toss a coin to your writer. No, nobody?
No. Everyone says no, and you're trying it again.
I hate you all.
Even the guys in chat said no.
What? No! You all let me down! before we move on, was there anything else you wanted to kind of cover about your weapon histories and overall the DN Speak brand and site?
I just want to give a shout out to the community for making it what it is. I mean, it's not just my voice that you're hearing from these lists. It's the ideas and opinions of thousands of different DMs out there I'm just the curator. I'm just the person that puts it all together. So it's a, it's really cool to create an idea that you put into one of these lists and then later you hear about other people using it.
Right.
Like, and how much it affected their game and like how it changed everything. And it's really cool. And just wanted to give a big shout out to the community.
Shout out sent. yeah, you're right. That's, and I think that goes not just for the D&D speak, but D&D as a whole, the community overall, I think, aside from the few douchebags, which there are, most of them are pretty awesome and super helpful. And the D&D 100, is it reddit.com/D100?
Yeah, r/D100.
That just sounds like an absolutely awesome community.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Any secret projects you're working on that you can share with Crit Nation?
Yeah, you're going to have to roll a charisma check.
Good thing my character's charisma is a nat 20, so here we go.
That's cheating.
It's not cheating.
So
I rolled.
So yes,
it was really good.
Yeah, so there's a few things that, I'd love to talk to you guys about. One of the big ones I have coming up is a project I've been working on called Hex Daily.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what I'm doing is I'm coming up with a different location for a hex map every day.
Ooh.
So like a whole, like kind of like a fleshed out location that you can add to your hex maps. So I do a lot of exploration based campaigns. Mm-hmm. So these are incredibly useful for me. And it's another one of those things where it's hard to find like detailed hex keys out there.
Right.
It's hard to find like ideas for these locations. So I'm trying to come up with one for every single day. I randomize a terrain and come up with it. So for example, like today could be I come up with a mountain location. Tomorrow it could be a swamp location. The next day a forest. So once I get 100 of these, I'm gonna release a hex map with all 100 locations in it.
That's cool.
just kind of just release that in just one, like, 100 location bundles.
All right.
That's awesome. That sounds so cool.
Really excited about that.
I'm a little on the, I don't really know exactly what the whole hex thing is.
Instead of like, squares, it's hex shapes. Oh, just different style of map.
Oh, okay,
it's
okay.
Used for like overland travel.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
We don't use.
I thought we were talking like actual hexes and like this. Like these are all like weird teleportation circles and there's 100 fucking different ones. I was like, what is happening?
No. I don't. When I use overland maps, there's usually I don't do the hexes or the grid at all. Okay. So you wouldn't have seen that unless you played somewhere else. But, all
right. Okay.
So there's actually a Twitter account I made for this. That's just. It's just Hex Daily. So you'll have to go and follow it. Check that out. It's a work in progress, but...
Hex Daily?
Yep.
On Twitter. Hex Map Daily? Yep, Hex Daily, that's you. It says you follow me. I follow you now.
Yep. Woohoo!
I'll put the link in the show notes, you guys. You can follow him, too. Make sure to. The content you're putting out is just fantastic.
Thank you.
And I'm really excited to see. I'm going to go watch your videos because, you said you only got one right now, but we're going to help you. We're going to help you take off.
Woohoo.
Really appreciate that, guys.
I'll see when I find the video, I'll add it to the show notes. Yay. So, all right. With that being said, before we move on to our honor tips and tricks, we have another gift to give away. Compliments of Jeff Stevens. Revolutionize your game with this collection of 16 mini adventures, includes NPCs, locations, new creatures, magic items, and add to your nautical adventure.
Who doesn't love magic items? Except this guy.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
He's the only guy.
No, well, and I think that has to do because I played 3.5, where every single person had to have magic items to be interesting. Like, to keep up with the challenges, if you didn't get so many magic items so often... And I felt like it was almost a chore for me to keep up, and I got sick of it, to be honest. That's a personal preference, not a law.
I missed the weapon creation rules from 3.5.
Yeah, well, okay.
Here we are.
Anyways, who is our winner today, Casey?
Our winner is HarrisDew81.
You did it.
I'm gonna be honest, I miss cheering and dancing to Hulk's entrance theme. Real American Hero. I really do.
You're the only one.
The hell out of here with that shit. Congratulations, HarrisDew81. If you enjoy the product and adventure, please leave Jeff Stevens a review. If you didn't win, have no fear. Head on over to critacademy.com/Jeff Stevens and get Encounter on the Savage Seas 3 free. Dun dun dun.
Yeah.
That's it. Free. That's all you gotta do.
And now, what you've all been waiting for, our Unearthed Tips and Tricks segment, where we bring you new and reusable material for both players and DMs.
Ian, would you like to tell us about our character concept today?
Our character concept today is Forged by the Gods. The gods decide to have a contest among themselves, as they do sometimes, not of a creation of objects or even worlds, but a single individual.
Which is totally badass.
Oh yeah. Each god creates a person who is instilled with their qualities and values of their deity, and they are each placed into the world as a small child who does not know where they are from.
Ooh.
As they grow, each person seems to have a certain amount of luck about them, or seem to be above normal men.
Snooty bastards.
But they can back it up.
I mean, yeah.
And... Yeah, you made me look like a face, you dick.
Sorry. Deities.
Deities compare the qualities and deeds of their creations. The gods themselves cannot directly interact with them, but that does not mean they can't find subtle ways to support them or hinder those of their rivals.
I just want to say, this is an amazing concept because every person at the table could totally have a character like this,
and
they could all put them just together like this, and then you have now... So you have three players. You now have three deities who are all constantly looking at each other like, hey, you see my little boy right there? He's doing great. He's doing better than yours.
Oh my god, they're like just watching. Oh my god, it's like Hercules where they're standing over a bowl watching. I'm like, that's my boy!
Look at that. I bet yours can't do that. Huh? He just did a triple backflip, stabbed the guy in the neck. What can yours do? Mine can fly. Well, shut up.
He can't fly if I cut off his wings.
So this is really intriguing because this is very much, I'm a huge, and actually it came up earlier, I'm a huge Percy Jackson fan, and this is very much in line with what's going on in that series.
Yeah, but Percy Jackson, they're demigods, so.
Well, similar. I mean, they're creations here. They're not offspring, but.
I want to also say, I feel like this takes a lot of inspiration from, what's that new D&D supplement that's coming out soon?
Theros?
The Odyssey of Theros.
Yeah,
Theros,
that one. Yeah. And I was so excited
about
that.
It would really fit that.
And it's just,
I mean, once again, he's talking about creations, but you could easily change that to offspring and demigods.
Yeah, and that'd be, like, so fun. Like, this is great.
What do you think, Casey?
I think it's really cool. And it'd be kind of cool if, you know, you had that contest idea behind it. So it's like, it's kind of like your players are competing against each other, but they don't know it.
Yeah. And then there's other people competing against them as a whole as well.
Mm-hmm. Which are quite literally deities.
Now, and this is great. The reason I also like this is because we know the characters are stronger than most of the things that they come up across. This could be a good story reason for that. They aren't just people. They are slices of divinity or some shit. Yeah, and
they have that divine spark in them.
And that fits with like the traditional theme of the cleric and the paladin. Well, the old paladin, not so much the new paladin.
Yeah.
But you can pepper that in there, that maybe the cleric, his god is cheating a little bit and giving a little bit of something extra.
He's like, oh, you're gonna do some great things, buddy.
Helping him from the sidelines when he's not supposed to.
You know, Hades is looking over like, fucking cheating.
Because really, once again, I hate to go back to the Percy Jackson thing, but that's kind of what's going on, is the gods aren't supposed to directly help their offspring.
Yeah,
it's actually in Clash of Titans, the new one, where Zeus couldn't directly help him, but he gave him like a super magical, powerful sword. I was like, dude, that's like direct help, man.
It's like, it's not my fault if I just toppled this entire mountain onto one of them.
It was an accident. I farted. Yeah.
No. I stubbed my toe. I can't help it.
I think Casey's right. The greatest comes from what the DM does with the rivalry.
Yeah. That's where a lot of the story elements will probably come into play.
And I think you can do a lot with that.
Because they're deities.
Yeah.
They can kind of do whatever
they want. It doesn't
have
to be like, you could even take, I'm going to go back to the Greek theme and the you know, all that stuff. Hercules had like three trials he had to overcome. There could be three trials that could be
12, actually.
Whatever, okay?
The magic number three.
You get what I'm saying. There was a certain number of trials, and maybe that's what's driving the story, is they have this inner push to do this. They don't necessarily know what it is. I think, did Hercules know what he was supposed to do? He just knew he had to do a mighty test of strength or something, right?
Well, actually, the king who hated him had to give him 12 tasks. And okay, what's my next one?
But anyways, okay, so he did kind of. I envision it more of they have this pull to do something, but they don't know why it is. And maybe part of the story unfolds is that they're trying to accomplish these. And every time they do, maybe that's how you do the leveling up. Maybe you do the milestone system. And every time they achieve one of these goals, they level up. And at the end, there's this big whoever's left kind of, what is the stupid Katniss show?
You're talking about
Hunger Games.
Hunger Games,
yeah. Very much a Hunger Games thing with like heroes, which I know Ian would be a super fan of.
Yes,
I know he loves like just let's duke it out, bitches. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think
this would be a great thing to have. Like the ending of the campaign isn't some big bad guy; it's all the gods looking down at you guys and it says, "Now kill each other."
Oh, we got one slot to become a god. Which one of you are going to get it?
Yeah, like that would be awesome. Way cool. Yeah. And of course, everyone, again, they would all have to agree there's going to be a PvP moment at the very end. Everyone, beware of that. I mean, because, you know, obviously with some tables, PvP is kind of frowned upon. So.
Yeah, not at my table.
And
fucking banish. I'm looking at you.
Like, whatever.
And I'll admit, this concept, the two main inspirations was how in one of the comic book origins for Wonder Woman, yeah, how that goes.
I like Wonder
Woman. One of them.
Yeah, she was originally a clay statue, and Zeus basically blessed it into an actual person.
I wonder how he blessed it. Because we know what he does with
everything
as a swan
else.
And shit, right? Yeah, right?
Yeah, with how he blesses everything else.
That actually ruined it. and the other one was like the 20 Primarchs from the Warhammer 40K.
Ah.
Okay.
The good inspirations. Yep.
Essentially, the Emperor of Man basically splices genetic code into 20 sons, and they were accidentally sent across the galaxy.
Huh.
Where they each then create various feats and stuff. Like,
huh.
And they also mature very quickly.
My 3-year-old son is now 8 feet tall.
What happened?
So I think that'll do it for our character concept, Forged by the Gods.
Always fun.
Our monster variant of the podcast is called Storm of Sickles. So for those of you joining us for the first time, for our monster variant, we take one of the monster manual stat blocks and we make a few changes to give it a new life. So for this one, you're going to use the Swarm of Poisonous Snakes. I think this is probably the third time I've used that because it's so versatile. Oh, mm-hmm. I think this is the third time. So you're going to change it to a construct instead of a beast, and you're going to get rid of its bite. You're going to give it some new condition immunities: blinded, charmed, deafened, frightened, paralyzed, petrified, poisoned, basically all the shit that comes with being a construct.
Yeah.
But you're going to give it a new weakness: anti-magic susceptibility, which basically means it's incapacitated with the spell magic or anti-magic fields, making it worthless.
Hmm.
It's kryptonite. Turns out magical items, kryptonite is no magic at all. It has a new feature, the false appearance, which basically just looks like a collection of pile of sickles on the floor, like a farmer just took a break somewhere when they're motionless. But what makes them interesting is their new combat features. So Sickle Storm, at the start of each of the Sickle Storm's turns, each creature that starts its turn or enters its area within 5 feet of the Sickle Storm or shares a space with it takes 1d6 slashing damage. A creature that touches the sickle or hits it with a melee also takes 1d6 slashing damage. And then, of course, it has its sickle attack, which does 2d6 slashing and is halved when the creature is at half its hit points, like you've destroyed them, right? Just like any other swarm creature. The idea that I really like about this is it encourages the monster to move away without disengaging. Because by provoking the character to take damage themselves, it can bounce between all the characters. Because if you think about it, if it's in melee with three characters and moves away and they all attack, it's going to spread that damage. Now, it still might die, but the idea is that it's supposed to kind of shoot around and create like a whirlwind of...
it's just a whirlwind of blades.
Yeah, and very much like I almost used the dagger, the dagger. What is the stupid floating flying dagger ability spell? Damn it. You know what I'm talking about? It's got the swarm of daggers. No, not swarm of daggers. What the fuck is it called?
Ice dagger?
No, it's just all daggers. Nobody knows what it is. Come on, we all play D&D.
No one uses it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Whatever it is, the floating dagger spell. Really. I had to change it because it would have fallen apart a little bit. But anyways, this is something I thought was really cool and I think would be great to be included in an area where there's lots of constructs or some sort of artificer who would make these as some sort of like sentient weapon to kind of just roam its halls or something.
Alternatively, you could make it where you're inside this like ninja dojo and like all these ninjas and stuff are like, yeah, guys, let's just pull it out. It's like, what do you mean? It's like the sickles, just throw them at them. And they didn't realize that they accidentally had a whole bunch of magical sickles. And when they threw them, they all kind of actually stung together. It started magneton. Humming and they're just like,
there's like a fucking flying blender.
And then they start blending people and they're like, what did we just create?
What do you think
we
about
even do like a cursed armory?
Ooh.
Yeah. See,
like a haunted castle.
Oh, my dice are trembling, man. That's exciting.
So like this like thing in like armor, and it just now it's walking towards you, and it's just got sickles all around you. You're like, what do we do about this?
See, because that's fantastic, because it would fit like the animated armor theme, the flying sword. You could toss all that combined with this into a
could
a
you
death
imagine
armory.
If people thought it was just like a person, but then they keep trying to talk to it, but it's not responding because it's not actually a person.
Oh, you
and then. And they're like, oh, what is this weird spell this guy's doing? No, that's actually just a bunch of floating sickles that are trying to kill you. Sorry.
I like the idea of this legendary armory that might have a magical item, but it's protected by a bunch of magical weapons and armor.
Oh, man, this would be really great to go inside this artificer's house. Oh, my God, everything's attacking me. And it's not just, like, the walls. It's quite literally the appliances. What is happening?
Is that a flying toaster? Bam!
just knocks the guy right in the face.
Dutch oven. What do you think about this monster there, Casey?
Monster.
I love it. I think it's a really cool idea. I'm thinking right now of the hundreds of different ways I could throw this into my campaign.
D100 list, the amount of times you can use a sickle together.
I think this monster is badass.
Come and suck my sickles.
Oh, man.
I think that'll do it for our monster variant. Did you have anything, Ian?
Nope.
Okay.
We always get so much mileage out of these.
I know, right?
It's kind of crazy. They're just little, like, things, too. Yeah. I don't know.
Wow.
It's great.
You say it's little, but I don't I mean, realize it's how long really, it takes I mean, me to put yeah. this shit together.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I cannot create monsters worth shit. So
I honestly, I've gotten a lot better at it now that I know. I've looked at the monster manual so much. I know where to, if I wanted to steal a feature or an ability, I know where to go, which monster has it.
That's
so
fair.
I can get all the wording and stuff right.
Huh. That's fair.
Well, when you start publishing on DM's Guild and other publications, you really have to make sure you're
top notch.
You got your shit high quality because otherwise nobody wants that shit. That'll do it for our monster variant.
The Storm of
Austin,
Sickles.
Would you like to tell us about our encounter of the podcast?
I like encounters. The encounter of this podcast is Windy Willow Blight by our patron Kepler13, I guess?
That's how I read it.
A monster.
Jason. Hi, Jason. Thank you.
Hi, Jason. A monster hunter guild is currently taking in new members. The aspiring members need to fulfill a contract hunting a particular monster native to the Windy Willow Woods, just north of the town. Only thing is, unbeknownst to everyone, a pair of hobgoblins has slaughtered every creature, wanting to spend their honeymoon undisturbed in the woods. Oh, jeez. Their evil deed has awoken blights, and they are currently on the move to the horror of a lone druid calling the woods her home.
Oh,
what a
no.
weird string of events.
Yeah.
Not even close to what I was thinking when I read Windy Willow Blight.
It was a roller coaster.
I was like, that's a campaign all in its own.
Well, think about that. If you got this whole thing, we're ready. We're going to go slay some monsters, and you get there, and oh. There's some of one. There's some of another one. What the hell is going on around here?
And then you just see some hobgoblins, like,
just pounding, smashing.
And then you just see like, there's just blights all of a sudden everywhere, and they're scared, you're scared, they're running, you're running after them because you realize you have to kill them. And then there's just a druid who is like, I'm really trying to get everyone out of here. Leave.
Oh my god.
Just, what is happening? I don't know.
Well, I think it's interesting is why would they have slaughtered everything?
Well, they're hobgoblins. Who cares?
Well, no.
Territory.
I care. What if it's because they're...
They wanted some
the
space for their
honeymoon. The relationship is forbidden.
I think they just wanted some space for their honeymoon, and the only reason... Or the only way for them to get the privacy was to make the privacy.
Well, maybe that was their honeymoon, though.
Some peace and quiet.
Maybe that was their honeymoon, though. They went on a slaughtering spree together.
Oh, that's a good point.
Oh, baby, I love you. Squirt blood everywhere.
So romantic.
I got the head. Pull it from its body.
Slaughter your world.
Oh man,
what do you think,
weird...
Casey?
No, I love it. Like you were saying, that's more than just an encounter. It seemed like that could be a whole campaign.
That's just it's so weird.
But once again, I think there's a lot to be done. First of all,
oh no, for sure,
we know why the Awoken Blights came up.
Yeah,
we know now. Well, because you may not know that they're on their honeymoon. Could you imagine how the players would feel after they just realized they slaughtered a newlywed couple?
Yeah, well, I mean,
like, come on, they're still creatures. I mean,
they kind of fucked up a lot of stuff.
Yeah, but if that's like maybe that's part of their culture or something. I don't know.
Well, yeah,
I'm trying to play devil's advocate why I would feel bad for the hobgoblins.
See, if it was like, see, now that you're like, if it really was like part of their culture, that'd be rough. Cause then you're like, then they're it's mandatory.
See,
like now it's like, that'd be like
a rite of passage.
Yeah, and it's just like fuck. They were just doing their thing.
I was just like, when we get married, we've got a rite of passage. It's just less violent. Well, for most people, it's less violent.
Yeah, most people, it's less violent. Hold on.
I do think that there should be a good reason of why they did that. And once again, I would come back to maybe they're from two different like clans or something that are at war with each other. And they very much a Romeo and Juliet, but for monsters.
Also, the whole lone druid being in there, you gotta like
just horrified watching these things go at it.
Watching them go at it, murdering and otherwise.
What are they doing at the same time? Like doggy style with a bow.
That's just weird, man.
Okay, I'm going into weird locations.
We're getting along.
Now?
This show may not be suitable for young children and some adults.
Most adults.
What do you think,
me being
Ian?
One of them.
Well, I can't get the image out of my head now. Thanks a lot.
Glad to help.
We did
big,
it.
Big furry monsters. I think this is great. I've definitely, as a DM, would sit down and plot out why this is kind just of like, going
why
on.
Is it happening?
I think the blight thing is great.
Oh, yeah.
Because having an entire forest attack you nonstop.
You're just always in enemy territory.
No rest.
Yeah.
You probably can't take no rest, so it would be very taxing on the resources of the player characters. So, anything else on this?
It just made me look up Miguel Zavala's Hobgoblins he released last month. He's a guy that like
does made... Hobgoblin porn?
No.
Oh,
thank goodness. Oh my.
He's the guy that made all the
so there's
the monsters from the Monster Manual into 3D minis for free.
Oh, on Thingiverse? Is it on Thingiverse?
Yeah.
Very cool.
I mean, look at those Hobgoblin world work, man. That looks freaking nice.
That does look dope. So, that'll do it for our encounter, the Windy Willow Blight. Now, we have a magic item here, but I hear, Casey, you brought your own.
Yeah, I sure did. I've got one here that I actually just recently used in my campaign.
Oh, I'm excited.
Let's hear it.
Okay, so it is the Ring of Hellfire.
I'm already in it. All right.
So this ring... when three small bloodstones are placed in the empty slots in the ring, it acts as a direct conduit to the nine hells.
Oh.
So it is able to manifest a small pinhole portal to the nine hells that is capable of shooting out a 5-foot blast of flame, dealing 1d6 damage as a bonus action.
As a bonus action?
So you can kind of think of it like a small turret. So like anywhere 10 feet around you, you can shoot this little portal out of the ring, and it shoots out little fireballs at things near it.
Okay. That is cool.
I
With
like
your
it.
Your powers combined.
Exactly.
Fire from the nine hells. So basically, they point this ring at a spot, a portal opens, and gouts of flames just shoot out of it. What is the range on those?
For I had it as 1d6 turns, so it's kind of random. It's kind of chaotic. I guess opening these portals.
It is, you know, a hellfire coming out of Avernus or something, so it makes sense. Right. Yeah.
So anywhere from 1 to 6 turns is how long it lasts.
Okay, so but how does it determine, so...
What's the range on it,
yeah, like, it come. You cast it and the portal opens at a random point in that range, or at a specific point, and then just randomly shoots.
So the way I had it was, anywhere around 10 feet around the character is where you could place the portal. And it shoots out a little fireball. So, I mean, it could be up
okay,
to, like,
I gotcha.
60 feet
okay.
away from it.
Okay.
That's really cool.
You
like
could probably
that.
Do some...
I like that is a... It's kind of sounds like it's its own thing. Kind of reminds me of, like, the guard... What is the weapon? The spirit weapon thing. Where the cleric can summon like
weapon?
The magical weapon. Instead, it's like a portal that shoots gouts of flames.
That would just be kind of fun to play with. I feel like
I think what would be cool. Do you ever watch Inuyasha? The guy has that little stupid hole in his hand that sucks things in.
Yep.
What if I gave this? You gave this item out, and over time it got bigger. So just, you think, oh, it's just getting stronger, just like cantrips. But in actuality, the portal's getting bigger, and eventually
because
it opens,
it's
and little demons
unstable
come through.
And
yeah.
Eventually it causes summon greater demon, and it can't be controlled because you can't prepare the circle, and it's just like, ah. Oh.
So,
I love the idea of it getting more powerful over time. Mm. That is cool.
because it's unstable,
it's
right?
Bigger.
Yeah.
We watched, where we did covered ancestral weapons, basically weapons that like grow with your characters over time.
God. Ancestral weapons are so cool.
So cool. And every time I make a magic item, I'm like, I need to give this like 3 stages. And first thing I thought is, opens a portal, what can I do with that?
Like,
that is awesome.
I love the concept of like evolving weapons because it's magical. Something, either it's going to get weaker or it's going to get stronger. There's no way it's going to be constant because that's just not how D&D works.
Well, it could be. It's not constant. Like your flame tug, sometimes it's off.
I mean, I guess that's true.
Sorry, I didn't mean to derail your thing.
But like that, definitely have to
so
definitely
is,
add in the portal thing where it summons a random demon and
is
it starts
this,
fucking fighting everything.
Is
I
this,
love that idea.
Is this rare? Uncommon? Does it require attunement or anything?
I'm assuming it has to require attunement.
Yeah, definitely okay. requires attunement. I'd probably say it's pretty rare.
Yeah, it definitely
what
sounds...
are the three bloodstones, I must ask? Do you just have to kill something and harvest it?
So the Bloodstone is just a random gem that we had encountered a lot of in the campaign. Uh-huh. They just kept randomly rolling. So I was just like, yeah, I mean, three Bloodstones, blood, hell, you know.
I would have just, harvested it out of a person and be like, oh, hey, I have this person. I'm going to harvest some blood out of you real quick.
So is there a limit my hand in it. To how often they can use it?
The way that I did it was just once per day, and it just resets after the day's
end. See, I'm generous, and I would say that each of those three small Bloodstones holds the power and charges, and that's three charges, and it drains, and you see the red dim from, a bright red blood color down to, a dull, dark, dried blood color, and then every dawn they recharge.
Okay.
I love that.
Can I have this item? I have the item where, especially the part where it gets stronger and gets randomly, big portal, and I'm like, oh, fuck, what'd I do here?
I mean, and it is, if you're, does it not work when you're in the Nine Hells?
I didn't think about, well, it could just be, Nine Hells is
or
pretty
do,
thick.
Do you find out that the portal, you eventually track it down to find out the portal just opens to, a lantern, and all that gout of fire is like somebody's lantern turning on and off. God, I'm stupid. Oh, shit. I really like this Ring of Hellfire. I think it is really cool, and it sounds like a lot of fun. The fact that it's a bonus action is really cool, because then it still gives them the option to do other other things. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
You got anything on this, Ian?
Another option is to get connected to Planet of Fire.
Oh, yeah. If you didn't want to include the Nine Hells, it could be pulled right from the Planet of Fire.
Yeah.
And maybe the Gout of Flame... is a fire elemental's arm reaching through. Oh, that's cool. Just goes,
and it's like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, take it off.
Trying to grab people. like when in those old horror movies when the guys bust their arm through and they're just flailing wildly. That's not a gout of flame, that's something's arm.
take the ring off. All right, quick.
Oh my gosh.
Let's go to grab Jimmy.
I think that'll do it. Thank you for bringing that. That is really cool.
Ooh.
Old, yeah, of course.
Old Handy does it again. The stone is a beautiful gem each dawn, but over the course of the days it's used, it becomes more fluid, like a coagulated and congealed mass of blood.
Ooh.
Damn.
People are...
That is creative as hell. All right, that'll do it for our magic item, the Ring of Hellfire. Compliments of D&D Speaks, Casey Willis.
Thank you.
Our Dungeon Master tip of the podcast is, players love a familiar face or place.
Always.
Reuse previous settings, revisit an old tavern that took place in a much earlier part of the adventure. This creates a significant sense of nostalgia. The remember when moments, right?
Oh,
and everybody loves those.
Remember when we fought that troll here? Yeah, I got one shot by the bartender. Thanks, man.
Let me tell you, you were in a bar and something interesting happened with a guy with a giant sword. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that's what I'm referring to.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if that was... on purpose or not.
Yeah.
The NPCs that they encounter are, part of those characters' histories and create a, it gives you an opportunity to create a new layer of emotion for them down the road. Remembering that NPC that they rescued is now a successful merchant, or maybe they're a family man, or even maybe they're running the place and they're the mayor of the town.
Or the farmer you beat up decided to work out and to beat you up back.
Oh shit, he busts through the tavern doors. Hey, Zorax! I got a bone to pick with you. Of course, Zorak's gone up 5 levels. He's like,
I worked out. He's like, yeah.
You're Jet.
So have I.
You should see this new ring I got. Got it in the Nine Hells.
I want to see what it does. Guy's like, the fuck Nine Hells? That shit don't exist. Oh, buddy, you wish.
It is worth noting that you want to be careful not to overuse this, because you don't want to make... Because if you do, the world can end up seeming small, and you definitely don't want that.
Mm-hmm. But it does help reinforce continuity, though.
Yes, and that is part of it. Like a seasoning on your steak, you want just the right amount. Not too little, not too much, right?
Oh, yeah.
Casey, what do you think about this DM tip?
No, that's kind of what I was... kind of what I was referring to earlier. This those remember when moments is what you're looking for.
Yeah,
I love this tip. I think that's a great idea. Like a central hub, players meet back up at after the adventures.
There was
just hopefully it's not the Nine Hells.
In one of our fourth in one of our fourth edition campaigns, I had a traveling merchant, and honestly, I blatantly stole it right from Final Fantasy X. His name was Owaka.
Avatar the Last Airbender.
No, his name's Owaka. Right? That's literally what it was in Final Fantasy X because I wasn't very creative then. And he had, every time he would show up, he had his normal wares, which were mundane items, a few healing potions, whatever. But he always had a really unique item. And it always was almost the exact amount that the party had in their inventory. And they would try to get it. And they tried to haggle with him, and he would always have this thing, and eventually they'd get him down to about half price. And the items that he sold were almost, and this is me being a terrible DM, were almost exactly the right thing that they needed for something coming up. Like,
that's not being a terrible DM.
I was basically giving them exactly cool. what they needed. Like, here, you need this, so here. But they had the option to ignore and not get it.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, think of it as like, I stole it from Zelda, but they were going into this volcano to fight, so he was selling flame resistant red tunics that I literally stole right from Zelda Ocarina of Time.
You know, whatever,
they didn't need it, but when they went, they didn't have to make saves against the heat like they would have if they would have went in. Now one person chose not to buy one, but he was a tiefling and had no fucks to give about temperature, so
he's like, fire's like nothing.
But I reutilized him, so eventually they caught on that his shit was expensive. But it always ended up being something that they were going to, it was going to make their life easier. So he became this reoccurring guy. And to them, that was kind of my pull on this. I don't know. Have you guys ever done anything like this? You, Casey?
You always gave me the bourbon toe ale. I always remember it for the rest of my life.
That's in every campaign.
Yeah.
Happens
usually,
once.
Usually,
there ever since.
I'll do something kind of similar with drops. So like if there's like an important item that like I know they'll need coming up, maybe I'll put it in like a small like treasure hoard or something.
Ooh, like that.
Maybe it seems mundane at the time, but that, you know, they had the chance to get it.
Hmm.
I like that.
That makes me think of the post online. Here, my players, because I appreciate you, I'm going to give you some magic items. Here are some rings of water breathing. Wow, these are great! Yes, and you also need them when you fight the Hydra next campaign. What? What?
Nothing!
Just remember, I love
you. What are we doing?
Oh, that's funny. Oh, which reminds me, I started the layout for the underwater adventure, Dark Tides of Damodan. It looks pretty cool.
There you go.
I've shared some on our Discord and on our Patreon, but that's my next big project. I mean, it's done. I just got to do the layout. So. Anyways, this is really important. You want to do those reoccurring, whether it's a merchant, whether it's a noble, whether it's somebody that the characters be like, oh, I know who that is. And make sure the characters evolve, right? Like,
they do have lives outside of just the characters.
Don't let them. Yeah. And that's why I mentioned the person you rescued earlier becoming somebody else or something else. Because you want the world to feel alive. And by making NPCs progress, that needs to be its own DM tip.
Yeah,
by making them progress, it makes the world feel like it's moving on with or without the characters. So
yeah,
do we got anything else we want to touch on with this?
Nope,
I think we're good.
All right, that'll do it for our Dungeon Master tip. Players love a familiar face or place.
Also, I totally, for some reason, the whole time moving thing just made me jump leaps and bounds real quick, but because I know Avernus has like this weird like time distortion thing going on. What if we like traveled so far in time? It's already been like centuries, so like everyone we know is already like gone. It's already like the next generations.
That's cool.
Be an interesting thing as well. But yeah, anyway,
we've done the time jump before, and it definitely, the one jump that I was in was 1,000 years.
Holy cow!
And it went from being fantasy to sword and sorcery to like steampunk sci-fi.
Yeah, to like sci-fi. Like you're suddenly in Ravnica or Eberron or something. Yeah,
pretty cool. Anyways,
kind of where I was getting with that. Right. Yeah.
Our player tip of the podcast is: don't be a dick. And you can avoid dickitude by giving your mundane equipment a history.
Wow, it's almost like that was the whole point of
right,
this.
Right, I know. your characters aren't the only way to tell a great story. Items themselves can have just as interesting lore and story as your character. Tying them in together makes it even better. This is very common in some of the most memorable stories ever told. In my opinion, the greatest example is the story of King Arthur and the Sword in the Stone. Which is not Excalibur, people.
Nope.
Excalibur.
It's not Excalibur.
Yeah, it's not Excalibur, right? The sword itself is only significant because of the story behind it, right?
Yep.
Which ties directly into Arthur becoming the king. In this example, both stories are tied together by, which is pretty much otherwise a very just mundane weapon that was put into a sword, right? Or into a stone.
Mm-hmm.
Do that with your character's equipment. How did you get that shield? Why does it have that crest on it? I saw new pictures of our Aquaman dressed as Kraven the Hunter, and he's got the big giant lion like thing over. Yeah, he's got the big giant lion thing. Why is your character wearing that? Well, he's a barbarian. I was like, did you slay the lion? I mean, my bare hands. Why else would I be wearing its like flesh as a overcoat?
Otherwise, like, why? It's like, oh, I got it from like the supermarket down the store. No, you didn't.
Fantasy Costco.
Like, you probably killed the thing, right? And tell us how you killed it. What'd you do?
Well, even not even going through that. Just the fact that you have a whole piece of armor that's basically, when it's buttoned up, looks like the head of a lion. That's going to draw attention. That's going to be interesting. It's going to be a topic for discussion. You need to tie that stuff into your character. Make it in mundane equipment. Why is your rope green?
That's a good point.
It's made of hemp. But everyone's going to ask why your rope is green. Well, when you get bored, you snip off an end.
Oh! That's actually a different kind of hemp.
What the? We're not. Don't bring science into my fucking fantasy, dude.
We've had this conversation like a month ago.
What do you think about this, Casey?
I mean, I completely agree. And I mean, what better way to do it than to roll on a D100 table of items, you know, item history.
Yeah, yeah, wow. Buddy. It's almost like we centered this podcast around this thing.
Yeah. Very cool. And it doesn't have to be a sword. It doesn't have to be your armor. It could be your shoes. It could be a bracelet your character wears.
Just be like a pauldron.
Like, in the Stormlight Archives, the females, one of their hands is always gloved. It's called their safe hand, right? Instead of wearing a ring for marriage, they cover their hands up because it's very sensual or whatever. Something like that. If a character showed up with a gloved hand, like a mitten, people are gonna ask about that. You know what I mean? Yeah.
It's the middle of summer. What are you doing?
Yeah. Well, in my culture, you see, this is a very risque sort of thing to show, like, and you know how the ladies used to stick their leg out? You're sticking your finger out. Yep. Entice people.
Whereas everybody else, by the other culture, probably like, it's a hand. It's the same as your right hand.
This one's special. But anyways, it doesn't have to be the weapon or equipment, so consider other equipment that you're carrying. Maybe your backpack's special.
Yeah.
So, do we have anything else on this? Did I miss anything? Oh, I like it when you guys just give up. Alright.
I just have to sleep.
So, before we close out, Casey, thank you so much for joining us. Do you want to give yourself another plug?
I mean, I'd just like to take this opportunity again to thank you guys, to thank the community, thank just, you know, all these awesome, cool, like, brands like Crit Academy, D&D Speak, like all these that are just making the community a better place.
You're right.
Yeah, if you guys, if anybody listening hasn't heard of D&D Speak or the D100 subreddit, if you ever need a D100 list, go and suggest them over there. And the community is really great. They're all really nice people. And you can get some pretty great ideas pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I will be paying you a visit. Like I said, I'm trying to make a weapons chart for awesome combat descriptions because I suck at it. So
let's do it. Let's work on it.
Oh, sounds good. Stab, I actually have some started already, like his neck. 10 or 20. So I got a good start.
Perfect.
So. But I ran out of ideas. I told you I'm not creative, which is weird because I run a D&D show.
Yeah, huh. It happens.
I'm only as great as my D100 tables that I rely on.
There you go.
Oh, that'll do it. Please join us on our next episode. We'll be discussing Ultra Modern. I'm really excited for this. Ultra Modern is a 5e rule set for
supplement
for like fantasy weapons, futuristic style combat.
You want some cyberpunk? Here's the stuff we pull it from. You want mechs? go here. You want spaceships? Go here.
Yes. Well, I don't know, man. That Grease Monkey's Guide to the was pretty chock full of awesome mech shit.
Oh yeah, but
So we're really excited to talk about that. So you'll be seeing a little bit deviation from the traditional 5e stuff for the next couple segments. Because I've got another couple I want to talk about after this, so I'm really excited to cover it.
If you have any feedback on our tips and tricks or topics you would like us to discuss, please send them to us. You can email them to us at critacademy@gmail.com, or you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Crit Academy.
We hope you enjoyed your experience here at Crit Academy, and if you did, you can help others find our show by leaving a hopefully 5-star review on iTunes. Please, you don't have to have iTunes to create a free account and leave a review. All of the podcatchers use that as a resource, so by adding a review, you help extend our reach to the stars above. I'm not Jesse, and neither of these guys are James, but you know where I'm going with that.
But I am Meowth.
That's right. If that's not something you're wanting to do, you can send us a message just telling us how much you enjoy the show. I love getting those.
It tickles his dice.
It does.
All the time. Just keep doing it.
Or just give us a like and a share on all our posts.
Yeah.
Make sure to subscribe to our show at CreditAcademy.com. Follow us on Twitch.tv/CreditAcademy and subscribe on YouTube so you can help us out. Wow. I really am off today. So we can help you on your future adventures, as well as a chance to win cool prizes each and every week. Make sure to check out our fellowship members as well.
It must be nice just to be off occasionally. I'm off every time we start. Yes, if you haven't checked out our fellowship members, I highly recommend checking out Gabe and Jeff. Their podcast, Interparty Conflict, is all about answering your questions. They just had a really, really great one on dealing with people who get information mixed and poor communication between the DM and the players. It was a very great listen. Go and check that out. Also, check out Brute Force and Ignorance. Their podcast is the actual play podcast on the Fellowship. Those guys are awesome. Their shit's really funny. They're from all over the world, so they got interesting personas. So definitely check those guys out. They're going to be on the show soon, too, so I'm excited for that.
Woo!
There's one last thing I wanted to talk before we close out. We have been officially invited to the Nerdarchy convention, and we will be attending in the end of October. So keep a lookout for more information. You can head on to nerdarchy.com and look up the convention information there, and we'll be feeding it to you more and more we get there. So
I'm really excited about this.
To get a personal invite from James Intercaso, I'll be honest, I fangirled and was like, ah! So.
You were extremely animated at all very quickly.
Yeah, you can't even imagine how exciting that was. Like, I love Tabletop Babble, and I listen to that shit all the time, and I've read through and got much of his content. So, anyways, I am your host, Justin.
And I'm your guest, Casey Willis.
I'm your co-host, Austin.
I'm your co-host, Ian.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Keep your blades sharp and spells prepared, heroes.